Thank you for coming.
Welcome.
My name is Lisa Barlow. I am one of the owners of Vita Tequila. I also own a lifestyle marketing and branding company where I launch TV shows. But my affiliation with this is primarily to talk about being LDS and owning liquor brands.
And I am Tanner Leonard. I am a lawyer, and my practice is solely on Utah liquor laws. So I work with bars, restaurants, hotels, golf courses. Bless their hearts, I've even got retirement communities that I work with and help them go through the DABC process, from permitting through issues while they're operating, transferring licenses. I sometimes am up on the hill talking to people about liquor laws and changing them, but it's just kind of a stopgap there. So I really, really do a little bit of everything that has to do with laws.
And I am, my microphone works so much better than yours. I am Michael Eccleston. I own Quarters Arcade Bar in downtown Salt Lake City. We are freshly open, about a year and a half now. So I was asked to speak mainly as a business owner who had to navigate Utah laws with Utah liquor laws. So I am not Mormon. I was raised Mormon. So I get it. But no longer Mormon. And I think, you know, I was asked to talk basically about kind of bridging the gap between the cultures of bar culture and Mormon culture. So.
And I have never been Mormon. I moved to Salt Lake City 11 years ago, and it's been very interesting navigating the laws when they were written by people who, for the most part, don't drink. So,
which is complicated.
Which is complicated.
I actually don't mind our liquor laws here, being a brand owner. And, you know, when you look at the country as a whole, like, some are way more strict than what we have, and then some are less lenient. And here I think it's a good mix for, and I don't want to speak for you, but for bar owners and brand owners. So basically, I'll give you a little background on me. I grew up in New York, born and raised. We are converts. Like, literally the Mormon missionaries knocked on our door, and my mom screamed, "I've been praying for you." And my dad literally wanted to, like, hide for the next year while they came over and gave us the discussions. But we found something in the LDS church. Like, I have, my dad was pretty much agnostic. My mom loves God, loves Jesus, and, like, really raised us to do the same. So when the missionaries knocked on our door, we were kind of excited. I'm one of five girls. I have one brother, and there's two cute boys, like, knocking on your door saying, "Can we teach you about Jesus?" And we're like, "Yeah, of course, come in." So fast forward, I end up going to school out in Utah. I've gone to a lot of colleges and universities. BYU was one of them. I love my experience there. I actually feel like becoming LDS was great for me. There weren't a lot of LDS people in New York, and my family loves a good party, so I grew up around a lot of relatives, a lot of people that love libations. Like, everybody drinks. There's an excuse to drink for everything. Clam bake, birthday, everything. There was lots of alcohol around. I never had an affinity for it or against it. Like, I felt like my family had a great time drinking it. And then going to BYU too, I never kind of got engaged into the LDS culture, but I definitely liked the religious side of it, but I never really got involved in the culture. So when we first launched the alcohol brand, Vita, our very first brand, which is an amazing tequila, my mom cried. She was super upset. She's like, "This is against everything I taught you." And I'm like, "No, you taught me to be kind, love Jesus, love God, and to be a good person. This is my business." And she had a hard time with that at first, but I never did. I kind of always have looked at religion as a choice and my business as also a choice, and I enjoy both a lot. My son's here right now. He's playing on my phone, but we bring him to church. We raise him LDS, but he's also exposed to a lot of alcohol. I mean, his nose is probably better. We don't let him drink it, but he smells it all the time, and he knows, like, "Oh, that's our business." And my mom owns Vita. My dad owns Vita, and we've since expanded the portfolio. And when I first, like, you know, told some of our local friends here, like, hey, we're getting in the alcohol business. They were like, how do you do that? How are you owning an alcohol brand and being LDS? And I'm like, it's easy. It's like, your husband's a pharmacist. He sells drugs. Is that hard coming to church? So we kind of, for me, it's never been, I've never been a cultural Mormon. So I think it's easy for me to, me personally, to be involved in both the religion and the business side of it. There are definitely, personally speaking, some things with the church that I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Like, I probably don't believe in that. And, you know, maybe Brigham Young was hitting it with young girls and, like, the right man for the job, but not my guy. But I actually love being LDS, and I love being in the liquor industry.
So talking about history and background is a little different for me. It's not as interesting. I mean, I grew up in, but I've always been interested in the law. I've always been extremely law-abiding. So I grew up and never had a drink until I was 21, just because that's the law. And Utah has very interesting liquor law history. It was came into the Union not as a dry state. There were 20 other states that came in dry, and in 1897 everybody thought, like, oh, we're going to come in and be dry too, and it didn't happen. They didn't even let certain areas of the state be dry until 1911. They did go completely dry in 1917, and then, as you guys I'm sure know, we were the state that on December 5th 1933. The 21st Amendment cast the vote that up on the Capitol Hill that brought alcohol back to the entire country. And in 1935, the state decided to enact the State Liquor Control Act, which is what I practice under. And a lot of those laws came from John Rockefeller, wrote a whole book called Towards Liquor Control. And he wrote that book in 1934. He also was a teetotaler and did not drink. So our laws from the very beginning are based off of people who don't drink. And the thing that is interesting, it is very true that there's weird laws in all of the different states. And I got a call from a guy who's interviewing me from the LA Times. And he said, Tanner, Utah, everybody's got crazy laws, but you guys are the only ones that are constantly changing them. And so that's why, you know, you give me something to write about. The other ones, you know, in Philadelphia, you can have BYO in some places and not in the other, and it's going to change which depending on which street you're on. But it's been that way since about 1890. Like, nobody's making a big deal about that because it stayed the same. So what's been interesting for me in navigating the laws is how much they're constantly evolving and changing, and certain places do things now that they couldn't have done, and vice versa. So that's my short spiel on liquor history laws.
Yeah, I guess I'll talk about my personal history. So I grew up in a house that was both Catholic and Mormon. My dad's entire side of the family is Catholic. My mom's entire side of her family is Mormon. My dad converted because he loved my mom. But I grew up around alcohol, like you're saying, family dinners and stuff. Everything on my dad's side of the family, there's always wine on the table. So it was never super taboo for me. We were also what I call Catholic Mormons, which is you go to church on Mother's Day and Easter, and those are the 2 days of the year that you go to church. I'm sure people call that Jack Mormon, but we really weren't Jack Mormon because we followed all the rules. We just didn't go to church. Then when I got older, same thing. I didn't drink at a young age. I had my first drink at 20, mostly because I knew that alcohol inhibited brain development and that your brain is in peak development from 18 to 25, but no one's going to wait till 25. I got drunk for the first time at 20, when I was halfway into my degree at University of Utah. And then I kind of fell into the service industry. I mean, I was in food service since I was 16, but was opening crew at a restaurant called Copper Onion in downtown Salt Lake City, and that is the job that made me realize that culinary arts are worth taking pride in and taking seriously. And we try to continue that kind of legacy at Quarters. A lot of the training we do with our staff is based on, like, making a life in the service industry, because we think it's a noble industry. But yeah, the alcohol laws, I guess from being a new bar owner, part of my experience with interacting with alcohol laws in Utah is, firstly, if you haven't worked in the industry for 10 years, you probably shouldn't open a bar, because you probably won't understand all the laws. And like Tanner said, they change a lot. Where that's difficult for bar owners is, you know, if you have to have a, if or a restaurant owner, if you have to have a Zion curtain 1 year, and then 2 years later you don't have to have a Zion curtain anymore, and now you have to have a 10-foot barrier around your bar at which 21-year-old people can't sit. Where before they could sit at the bar, but they had to be behind a wall. For some, the laws change in the middle of you having a business, and your the layout of your restaurant doesn't change. So the sign curtain came coming down. Well, going up was silly, and then coming down was worse, because we forced a bunch of people to design their restaurants and bars around it, and then took it down and gave them new rules, and some of them are in small spaces. And I mean, I can't imagine having, there's a lot of money that goes into building out a bar. Things like that are seem silly and flippant and quirky, I guess, but when you are when you have your whole livelihood invested in a space, they're less quirky and fun.
I've had some really good billable hours that I did where I got to sit in the BABC and discuss the definition of a wall. Can a wall have a door? Can a wall have a window? Can a wall be made out of lattice? And it just gets to the point where it's a little bit silly. I do find it funny that I am the only totally never Mormon on the panel, and I was raised in a house without any alcohol. Like, nobody drank growing up in my family, so that's interesting. Yeah. Well, we don't really have a moderator.
But we can take questions.
We can take questions. I'm sorry.
I have lots of opinions on lots of things.
I
need guidance.
I wish I'd asked you to bring some samples.
I know. I wish I brought tequila with me now. Who's a fan of tequila? Raise your hand.
So I suppose all of you are in favor of legalizing other intoxicants, right?
Like weed and everything?
Cannabis.
I don't really have an opinion either way. I don't care. Is it bad to say?
I'm not a marijuana user. It's not, I mean, I have used it. It's just not a drug that I like. But being a dealer of alcohol, I think marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. And if we can be responsible with alcohol, I think we can be responsible with marijuana. But that being said, I don't know. I'm kind of...
I definitely think it's great for medical use. My husband's sister's husband passed away from cancer, liver cancer, and her neighbor just recently died. So she, after going through that with her own husband, like basically took care of her neighbor through the whole process, and she had medical marijuana, and it definitely helped her. So I think, like, you know, every situation's different, but I think it's, like, I'm all about, like, people can do whatever they want.
And then my opinion is right on the legal lines, which is the will of the people. There was a proposition, and in the state we have the second hardest ballot initiative process, and for that to have gotten through and to be done, I think there's a big, huge flaw in the system if that's not enacted. But I think that goes for anything, not just for Prop 2. Mm-hmm. We got somebody in the way back.
Question of basic terms. Are liquor and alcohol more or less interchangeable?
That's
liquor, beer, wine, for example? Or
there
wine?
Are statutory definitions in the Utah Code, and technically
awesome
alcohol is over anything that's over 0.03%, like mouthwash, is not. But interestingly, bitters that you can buy, like Worcestershire.
There you go.
So that,
well, vanilla extract is alcohol-based.
But those are considered food products. There's a loophole. When I say liquor laws, it's because it's alliterative, and I'm at Utah liquor lawyer. But technically, there's beer, heavy beer, wine, and liquor, which is the highest point. And so that's just your percentage points are getting higher and higher, and the portion sizes you're allowed to serve those in get smaller and smaller. And it also I'm sorry?
Ciders
have actually, they just changed that 2 years ago, that they used to be considered beer, and now they are considered wine, or vice versa. They just switched it around because of the weight by volume, but how it serves and how much it costs. But it's recently changed to be more favorable because we now have, I think, 2 going on 3 cider makers here in Utah. Whereas next door in Colorado, they have 30-something. So it's definitely a burgeoning market.
It's been really fun. We were the very first spirit brand. There was lots of beer brands out of Utah. We make our product in Mexico, obviously, because we're governed by Mexican law with tequila. There will never be tequila made in the United States. That's just
legally,
like cognac and everything.
Yeah.
You can do agave spirits, but it's been so fun for us to see how many other brands have come out of Utah, great brands. But it was fun too because we were the very first liquor brand launched in the United or in Utah in 2007, which I think was kind of cool.
Now there's tons.
Yeah. Now there's tons and great ones too.
It's a growing industry.
And more coming, yeah.
So it's a small group, so I can take some.
Yeah.
So along with your argument there, I come from southeastern Idaho where many good Mormons are growing barley beer. And when I bring that up, of course, it doesn't compute that they're growing barley for beer consumption. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I find it interesting, given the history of prohibition in the United States, you mentioned Olmsted, that there seems to be some ambivalence on this panel here about marijuana and cannabis use and basically the legalization of all intoxicants and the real heavy downside of our prohibitive laws in the United States, the jailings, the murders across the border in Mexico, that are all brought about by black market prohibition.
Yep.
This comes in the form of a criticism of you. You take it however you want, but it seems to me, given your experiences here, when I suggest, are you in favor of legalizing cannabis, I would expect your hands shoot up.
I didn't mean to come across as ambivalent. I've never done a drug in my life, so I don't have experience with anything other than spirits. Like, if you ask me anything about tequila, I'm an expert. I'm actually really great with gin, too. But I think I wouldn't take my ambivalent. Like, I feel like it's something I don't know enough about to, speak freely about. If you ask me about tequila, I'm great, but I don't know enough about, anything else to speak eloquently and great about it. So I think it's not about not caring or not thinking it's important or to think that one's better than the other. It's just I don't know enough about it. And I think just because our core business takes up so much of my time and it's hard enough to just focus on that I don't really get involved with anything else. But like I said, I think everyone should have the right to do what they want as long as it's not harming someone else. I strongly feel that way. I mean, my cousin smoked pot behind my house since they were 14 and I was like 5 watching them. Like, I didn't think much of it. I don't really care. I still don't. It's just not something I do. And I think because I'm so busy speaking for myself, I'm so busy with what I have to focus on because the ever-changing laws, the laws by state, that I just haven't had enough time to think about it.
Yeah.
I definitely think there were great arguments given, and there's a reason that bill passed here in Utah, which nobody, I mean, we talked to all of our suppliers, and sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but if you notice too, everyone in alcohol is investing in marijuana, like Constellation Brands, billions of dollars, Southern Wine and Spirits, billions of dollars. I mean, I think we're all on the same page. I just think it's something I don't know enough about.
Yeah, I think if you thought my answer was anti-marijuana, I don't know how you took it that way. It's not my drug of choice. I voted for medical marijuana in this state. I'm upset that it got gutted. I don't know.
Your response has struck me as that's fine. It's not something.
Yeah, it's not my drug. Alcohol is my drug.
And there's a big difference between legalization and decriminalization. Because in Amsterdam, it's not legal, but it's not criminalized. And so there's so many nuances. This is being recorded. I'm always very careful with my words. And so, no, I'm not going to say, yay, legalize everything, because that's, I'm not, again, that's not what the panel's about, but thank you for your criticism. It's always good to hear many voices.
Is that something you're passionate about that
very
you want,
so.
And then is that a business that you're involved in? No?
I'm very passionate about individual choice, freedom, exactly what you said, to do what you want,
as long as it's
not harming someone.
And there have been states where bigger alcohol interests have fought against that. And in Colorado, DWIs have gone down since, marijuana legalization. Which means less money out of the... But that's kind of... I think that's been more giant alcohol...
Yeah, and I think DUIs are going down across the country mostly because of the convenience of smartphones being able to call Ubers and Lyfts. DUIs have gone down in Utah since they put .05 into law. I think it's a little correlation without causation. Maybe it helped, but I don't drive when I drink. Responsible adults, which, at 21 years of age, we're saying you're an adult enough to imbibe something that's changing your consciousness. I think, everyone should be responsible and take a cab, especially in Salt Lake, where I can take a cab to Park City for $30. Yeah. It's really cheap here. I think there's a little bit of correlation stuff. People love to be my thing did the thing, but I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things. So,
as far as that subject of legislation and what degree the laws reflect the desires of the constituents, the voters, or don't correlate, I guess this is kind of a tangent, but something that you guys have probably thought a lot about. Short of propositions that don't get carried out and people being able to contact their legislators for that, we have some cases recently where there's opportunity for citizens to get involved, but just as a general run-of-the-mill kind of thing, when you're changing from the Zion curtain to a wall, a barrier, or shuffling things around, and like you say, laws are being made by people largely who don't drink and are pretty ignorant of what's involved, ramification-wise, whatever else, and it's no skin off of their nose to make these laws. What kinds of things have proven to be effective, if anything, for the average citizen to do to try to have things be more stable or more common sense or more reflective of the will of the voters in the state?
When I've been up on the Hill and have been talking to people, it's definitely a call your own legislator, and if you know that there's a bill that has anything to do with alcohol out on the table, ask them to read it and talk to you about it, because a lot of the times when these bills get passed and they get done, they just pass it because it's, they're just not thinking, and it's just, this is the bill and we're going to all sign it and go through. Unfortunately, there are lots of lobbying groups that I think are getting more and more splintered. So there's restaurant associations, there's a new brewers collective, there's a few different ones. And so if you can voice your opinion to those people,
the Bartenders Guild,
I don't think we have a lobbyist though.
Bartenders Guild is like a bartender. It doesn't have any money.
I don't know. But those organizations do hire lobbyists who have even more of a voice, because they have an actual room up on the Hill where they can sit down. And so if you contact, you know, the Salt Lake Area Restaurant Association or the Utah Restaurant Association. You don't have to be a member of that to say, I go to restaurants and, you know, talk to the executive director and say, you know, you guys have any legislation that you guys are trying to push? And if so, I'd love to come and speak at it. There's committee hearings up on the Hill. And, I mean, you have to sign up for the emails to get notice of when those happen. And they only have to do 24-hour notice, which I think also hurts the will of the people. Anybody who has to get up and go to a job usually can't be up there to be talking about it. But there are some of those types of opportunities there. End of the day, it does come down to talking to your legislator, maybe talking to some of these organizations that have hired guns up on the Hill, because there is one overriding interest, which is the LDS Church, which is on the other side. When you go into meetings with a legislator, they're also hearing from the other side. Is pretty much, there's only one interest on the other side. Maybe MAD as well, but even MAD came out against .05. So they said that they didn't want the money to go to that legislation. They wanted it to go towards distracted driving. Mm-hmm. So it's the one force on one side and then the industry on the other, for the most part.
Having owned a restaurant, too, I had a restaurant up in Park City. You know, it affected us a lot, too, because one day we're putting up an iron wall in front of the bar. One day we're taking it down. Now, you know, I wanted to do a program where we did to-go boxes for the Deer Valley Concert Series and, like, how the food revenue affected the alcohol revenue and keeping that in balance. It's very, you know, you have to understand the laws and understand how everything's going to affect you and your business, your bottom line, to stay in business. So it's interesting. And also being a liquor brand owner, owning a restaurant, there's Tide House. So we had to be very careful with that, too, like how much equity we owned. And we went through and got it approved by the state, which I never even thought about when we started.
Yeah,
the brand.
I mean, that's federal.
It's federal, so we had to have it all the way on up. And then just owning a liquor brand, like we have an import liquor brand. Everyone asks me for liquor. I love giving it away, but I have to go to the liquor store and buy it. Mm-hmm. I can't make it, ship it up to my house, and have a nice stash. I'm the biggest customer at the Draper Liquor Store. So maybe not the biggest, but probably close.
Yeah, and I think in general, when you're asking about, like, if we're talking about wish lists, right, I would love industry consultants to talk to, because it's okay. Like, obviously, a lot of our legislators are Mormon, and that's okay, and they don't drink, and that's okay. The problem is that if they are making laws about a subject they don't know anything about, then they should probably have some sort of consultant that can explain what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. There's a lot of liquor laws that are actually harmful. It isn't a law anymore, but you used to only be able to have one bar per block face in a city, and our blocks are really large here. So what did that do? It encouraged people to drink and drive, right? The purpose of the law was to stop bar districts from developing, but what actually happened is that people were drinking and driving, because even if there was a bar every block face, like somewhere downtown, sometimes you want to go to this bar, and then sometimes you want to go to this bar, and if they have to be this far away from each other, and the cabs take 25 minutes to show up because Uber and Lyft didn't exist yet, people were drinking and driving, and they saw that, and that law went away. But there are tons of unintended consequences that come from a lot of the laws that come out of the Hill, and it's just because they don't understand the culture of people who do drink or like. And so, yeah, wish list. I would love for them to at least like try to understand what actually happens when they put up a Zion curtain. What actually happens when there's no sidecars or no doubles. What actually happens when my restaurant has, I don't own a restaurant, but if I did, I'd have to maintain a 30% alcohol to 70% food ratio to have a restaurant. And what happens in a lot of times in those situations is people discount their alcohol because they need to make less profit off the alcohol. Then they have cheap alcohol, so people come to their restaurant and drink more cheap alcohol.
I make premium brands.
she makes premium brands.
Very good tequila.
But yeah, there's a lot of unintended consequences that I think both sides of the fence would be super excited about if we.
Yeah.
Could
throwing
just
out wish list. I wish we could do tastings in Utah.
Tastings
like I would
love
to have in-store tastings at the liquor stores. I think that that's awesome, and I think it gives exposure to a lot of people to your brand. One thing I do have to say is, though, being a brand owner in Utah, I actually like working with the UDABC. I think they tried really hard to make it in an equal playing ground. I'm competing against billion-dollar companies as a startup, which we self-fund. So for me, I love that they create an equal playing ground for us. I love that there's 39 liquor stores. Is it 39 or 41? Because they sometimes some close and then
open. Just open new one out in Saratoga.
So, but to me, that's great because I can be on the shelf with Patron, and you know, you don't have to have $1 billion behind your brand to move it. You can, like, we just rebranded and created a brand new beautiful bottle and have our beautiful juice inside, and I can compete against a $1 billion brand, which makes it nice. You know, if we do the right things locally, legally, and work well with the UDABC, I think it works out great for us.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times there's a lot of misguided anger at the DABC. The DABC is just like the enforcement entity. All of the anger should go to the Hill.
Yeah.
If you have anger, the DABC doesn't do, they're just doing their job.
We can give out numbers.
Yeah, the two people up at the Hill, there's never been an alcohol bill other than 0.05, which isn't actually, it wasn't under alcohol, it was under health and safety. But the only bills that ever pass are the ones who are written by one of the two legislators who are appointed by the LDS Church, and right now it's Representative Hawks and Senator Stevenson. So those are the two who, I mean, even if you're my representative is Senator Kitchen, and as much as I'm sure he would love to loosen the liquor laws, I don't even ask him to write anything because it's not going to get out of committee. So it doesn't matter. You got to talk to those two men.
And get engaged with the SLARA, Salt Lake Area Restaurant Group, you know, and like get involved with them and let them know. But we are really lucky to have amazing restaurants here, great venues to go to have libations. And I think that I remember when I first came to school here, everyone's like, oh, you need a membership to get in places. I mean, it's definitely changed a lot. And I think we have amazing, you know, we travel the country. We actually sell in a lot of the states here in the United States and other countries outside of the United States. And we have some of the best mixologists in Utah. Like, we have a bar expert program, and I think we have some of the most talented, innovative people. You can go to New York, and I always say, we've got better bartenders, and I'm from New York. I'm a diehard New Yorker, but I'm always like, we have the best bartenders in Utah, and I think they're so innovative. And they've learned to be creative because of what they can make a drink with, and, you know, I've actually really enjoyed working in the restaurant scene here. I think it's awesome. Lots of good places to go.
As far as changes to come, which, you know, the push to change things started, I mean, there's been changes ever since 1935, but the push to change most recently has come with the Olympics, and so that's what I see the next time that there probably will be a big push towards change in alcohol law in Utah with the support of the Mormon Church. It's going to be if we get 2030 with the Olympics. So that's forward-looking. I'm kind of not really looking at too much happening before then.
But I also think the Mormon Church is evolving, too. Like, you look at a lot of the younger kids, and, you know, for me, the biggest thing is like, I think, I don't know how many people here are LDS or experienced being a member of the church. I think the most interesting thing for me is, like, there's a box, and, like, you have to fit in it. And you almost have to be perfect to fit in that box, and maybe I'm a rhombus, and you're a square, and you're a circle. Like, everybody's different. And we're trying to fit in this little box. And I've learned, like, it's okay to be me. It's okay. You know, we were at church on Sunday, and our neighbor came up to us and was like, oh, my gosh, we bought your añejo. It's so good. You would never have those conversations 5 years ago. Like, and we joke because we pulled out of our driveway, and I know how we discard of our liquor bottles. And there's our bottles in the street. And I'm like, I literally sent out a message. I'm like, who's the closet drinker and why aren't we hanging out? Yeah. But I think the church is evolving too. I think this younger generation has so much access to so much stuff and how they look at the church and how they want to be a part of it. Like, to me, religion is a choice. Drinking is a choice. And I also think it's like how you look at yourself. Like, I have a very healthy relationship with myself. I have a very healthy relationship with alcohol. And I think younger people too, I like was talking to my girlfriend. I was on a walk with our dog and she's like, oh my gosh, I just got divorced. And she's partying like she's 22. And I'm like, I could never keep up with you. Respect alcohol, respect yourself. Like, don't try and catch up. Enjoy, savor, sip. No judgment. It's just like, hey, you might enjoy it more if you're not drinking this and mixing this and drinking all this in one night. Like, have a healthy relationship with alcohol. And I think this younger generation is going to change a lot of things.
I think
the way that what they have access to and how their perception of things and what is available to them, I think it's changing the laws and the culture here.
Yeah, and I can just even speak from a place of like bar culture. I go to cocktail conventions and we talk about, you know, management and the future of bars and all those things. And the future of bars is really about people who truly, genuinely care about safety of their customers and their staff, not enabling your staff, because there are a lot of people that do have problems with alcohol that definitely shouldn't be in the industry. And I think for a long time, those are the only people who wanted to work in the industry. The people who wanted to work in the industry are the people who needed to be next to 200 bottles of alcohol every night. And that's not how it is anymore. We take that really seriously at Quarters. We've done sexual assault prevention training. I've had to fire a few people in the year and a half that we've been open, but two of them were because they had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And knowing that, recognizing that, and not enabling that is the future of bar culture. And as well as safe spaces for, you know, people to be in a bar, regardless of gender, identity, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, as self-appointed moderator.
So I am the guilty party.
What do you do?
I am the moderator
that
was late.
Oh, hello. Yeah. We had a lawyer here. We're good.
Been following what is it, Roger's rules, and you know we're good. We're all good. Awesome. Well, do you have any questions or anything that you were supposed to tell us or ask us? Or
one thing I think is important, and I don't know if it's going to impact anyone here, but I think the biggest thing for me, being LDS and still practicing my own way, you know, like I guess LDSing my way. I'm not supposed to say Mormon anymore or whatever. But I've just learned to really enjoy God and really enjoy my life and knowing that there's a big separation between, and also like not judging people. I think a lot of times people, you know, like I don't like to be judged. I don't like to judge people. And I just, my big thing with being a liquor brand owner and being in the alcohol space is when people have a hard time with it, I'm like, that's your problem. Jesus loves me. God's the judge of me. And church is an open door. I just don't go in the pretty buildings. So I think like, I think everyone should feel welcome at church no matter what your decisions are, if it's marijuana, if it's whatever, cocaine.
What are the pretty
tequila
buildings? What is that?
Temples.
I go to the First Presbyterian Church downtown.
Yeah,
that's
those are
beautiful.
Pretty too. Yeah, they let me in. Our churches are ugly to me. Temples are pretty. They smell like diapers.
Yeah, and I think in I think in general, I find a lot of parallels between going to church and going to a bar. They're community gathering spaces where you can talk.
We drink wine at mine. Yeah.
They drink wine at her church. and I think for especially social creatures that we are, both things are very important. It's good for them to respect each other, 100%. Others' spaces, and know that they can coexist in the same city, state,
which I
country.
Think we're getting there.
We are getting
we're
there.
We're getting there. I actually feel like we live in a really cool state for evolution.
So
I think we're kind of cutting edge in some ways. Do you? You're the lawyer.
Definitely cutting edge as far as business and growth. And when we see things like Silicon Slopes and all the big businesses that are coming, but that is one of the things that I get asked to speak about and talk to and consult with are these businesses that have a very, very hard time attracting talent from other states to come here and work here because of the
stigma.
Because of the stigma. And once people get here, sometimes they don't have a problem with it, but then a lot of times they do. A lot of times they do feel like they're being criminalized or penalized and being told what they can and cannot do, such as go into somewhere and you have to order food to have your drink and, you know, feel like that. But yes, like I said, 2030. And in the meantime, it's in the meantime, it keeps me in business for sure. Good
times. Do you feel like you're getting what you need from like the state on like the issues that are important to you?
From the state?
Well, like from like our local government. Like, do you feel like you're happy?
I'm a resident of Idaho.
Oh, so you're not. I didn't know if you had like you lived here part time and there part time.
I don't even get what I want in my local politics, which I'm very involved with.
Got it. Oh, that's awesome. What part of Idaho are you in? Like, what city?
Southeastern. I'm in Rexburg.
Oh, Rexburg. Okay.
The most Republican.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You have great farmland, though. Best farmland ever.
Beautiful place.
It's so pretty.
Well, thank you guys. All right, thanks for being here. Yeah.
Let's go get a drink.
Yeah.